A good Wednesday morning to you, and welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. You can check out the podcast 24/7 in your favorite podcast app. Just search for the Nick Craig Show, tap the subscribe or follow button, if you are would be so generous, give the show a rating or review wherever you listen to it, a five-star if that is what is available. You can also listen online at nickcraig.com. That's nickcraig.com. We've got a busy show coming up for you this morning. However, we do start off with some details about an American hostage who has been freed under the Trump administration. Here are the details that we are tracking this morning over at Fox News. Freed American hostage Mark Fogel has officially landed back in the United States after years in captivity. So, he was an American who was detained in Russia in 2021. That, of course, was during the middle of the Biden administration, and he was not brought back. No surprise there. Fogel, who was a U.S. history teacher, was working at the Anglo-American School in Moscow. He returned to the United States yesterday after his release from Russia following talks with the Trump administration. He was serving a 14-year sentence after his arrest in 2021 at a Russian airport for possession of drugs, which his family said was medically prescribed marijuana. Now, before we get into any additional details on this, I don't know the full story. I'm not going to sit here and pretend to know the full story. But even if it was medically prescribed marijuana, I probably, if I had that, which is not legal in North Carolina, but if I had that, I probably would not try to travel to Russia with it. Now, I don't know how often Mark Fogel was traveling internationally, but many countries, including Russia, do not take things like that very lightly. Now, of course, because he was American and because of ongoing tensions between the U.S. and Moscow, the U.S. and Russia, it's really no surprise that they threw him in jail and he was serving a 14-year sentence for the possession of drugs. Fogel was seen pictured yesterday in a picture posted by the White House on social media, smiling and raising his fist while wrapped in an American flag as he walked off a plane on U.S. soil. This was the moment in the White House where President Trump greeted him, and Fogel talked about being an incredibly lucky man, thanking the president and thanking other individuals that put so much work into getting him back. If the audio will play, here we go.
I feel like the luckiest man on earth right now. And I want you to know that I am not a hero in this at all. And President Trump is a hero. These men that came from the diplomatic service are heroes. The senators and representatives that passed legislation in my honor to get me home are the heroes. I am in awe of what they all did. My family has been a force. I think my 95-year-old mother is probably the most dynamic 95-year-old on earth right now. And I am so indebted to so many people. I think I remember a Churchill quote that he said when the RAF was fighting the Luftwaffe, and he said that, never have so many owed so much to so few. And I put myself, fortunately and unfortunately, into that category. And I said, never has one owed so much to so many that this super organism of people that came to my support and the love that I was given sustained me for 3.5 years.
That is Mark Fogel yesterday at the White House. And by the way, did you see the time on that? That was at 10:30 p.m. Trump is in the Oval Office with Mike Johnson, with Fogle, with other individuals as Mark Fogle's back in the United States. Just going to show and prove, again, I'll continue to bring this up. You'll hear this from me a lot over the next bit of time. The compare and contrast between the previous administration and what we've got right now. I mean, it is a completely different animal. It is almost indistinguishable from what we had in the previous administration. Almost completely indistinguishable. Not only did you never see or hear a peep, a murmur, a word from Joe Biden, but whenever you did, it was a bunch of nonsensical rantings. And just 3 weeks into office, Trump is getting Mark Fogle, again, who was detained back in 2021, back to the United States. Remarkable situation. This is what leadership by strength looks like. You've heard that a lot from the president. It's one of the things that he believes strongly. It's one of the things that his supporters believe in very strongly as well. And this is another example of how leading by strength and not being a pushover on the national stage has such a major impact, has such a huge, carries such a huge amount of weight when we're talking about these very challenging diplomatic situations. So Fogle is back in the United States, thanking President Trump, thanking members of Congress and the diplomatic team that got him back. Welcome home, Mark. Great news there coming out of Washington, D.C. very late last night. Some other good news coming out of not necessarily Washington, D.C., but it does surround Washington, D.C. FEMA employees have been fired over their egregious payments for illegals. We brought you this story Monday morning very early as we were getting prepped for the show. Elon Musk put out a post on X. His post read as follows at the time. The Doge team just discovered that FEMA sent $59 million last week to luxury hotels in New York City to house illegal migrants. Spending this money violated the law and is in gross insubordination to the president's executive order. That money is meant for American disaster relief and instead is being spent on high-end hotels for illegal. A clawback demand will be made today to recoup those funds. That was on Monday morning when that news came in. And the details that we're learning this morning is that four FEMA employees, including a senior executive, have been fired over those revelations that they sent all of that money, nearly $60 million, to New York City to house and care for illegal aliens, according to a statement from the Department of Homeland Security. The firings, which were first reported by Fox News, include FEMA's chief financial officer, two program analysts, and a grant specialist. A senior DHS official told the New York Post, quote, effective immediately, FEMA is terminating the employment of four individuals for circumventing leadership to unilaterally make egregious payments for luxury New York City hotels for migrants. The statement added, under President Trump and security gnomes leadership, DHS will not sit idly and allow deep state activists to undermine the will and safety of the American people. Wow. Pretty strong statement there from DHS. The funds, which city officials said were allocated last year under the Biden administration, were likely sent via the Shelter and Service Program, known as SSP, which reimburses cities, towns, or organizations for immigration-related expenses. Funding under SSP is authorized by Congress and is separate from FEMA's disaster relief, which the agency's main funding, of course, helps individuals after disasters. However, the Department of Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem announced that Customs and Border Patrol is set to transfer $650 million of its 2024 fiscal year appropriation to SSP. CBP also falls under the purview of DHS. So we're cleaning up house. These individuals are, as you heard from the statement, insubordinate of the new administration. Now, here's the thing. Let me be very clear about this. there are plenty of people in government that do not like Trump. There are plenty of government bureaucrats that hate the current sitting president of the United States. And here's the thing. That's fine. You're allowed to dislike somebody. You're allowed to disagree with how they want to operate. But as a federal employee, what you absolutely are not allowed to do is be insubordinate. Whether you like Trump or hate him, irregardless of what you think is right or wrong, you're not the president of the United States. Whether you think something should or shouldn't be done is kind of irrelevant because the agenda is set out by the president. We'll be talking about that a lot over the next couple of weeks and probably months as we watch a lot of moving pieces ongoing. But you don't really get a choice whether you follow what the president wants you to do or not. The agenda is set by the chief executive. That is the president. That is Donald Trump. Again, whether you like it or not, he's moving forward with his agenda. He's moving forward with the agenda that the American people were in favor of. He won the popular vote. He carried 7 swing states. He ran a very strong campaign that resonated with the American voter, obviously. If not, he would have lost, but he didn't. He won handily. Major election victory for the president and Republicans back in November. So this idea that all of these agencies, and you heard in the statement there from DHS, that the deep state, that's exactly what they said, DHS will not sit idly and allow deep state activists to undermine the will and safety of the American people. That is exactly what's going on. You know, Trump talked a lot about the deep state in the first go-around when he was the 45th president. And I'm not sure he necessarily even knew what it was, how bad it was, or how deep and how rooted the issue is and continues to be. But it seems clear to me now that after his first term, being on the outside for 3 or 4 years, now being back in power, he has a much better grasp on who and what he's dealing with, which he didn't in the first administration, and that's not an issue. I mean, there are reports and rumors that even on election night 2016, the Trump campaign didn't even have a victory speech written because they thought pretty handedly that there wasn't a snowball's chance in hell that they would win. That's been corroborated by multiple individuals within the Trump campaign the first go-around. Then you had this, you know, huge push to fill all of these positions. There were individuals that did not have Trump's agenda in mind surrounding him in 2016. But that's not the case anymore. He had to learn those lessons, I'll admit, a pretty hard way. He did not surround himself with the best folks, and I'm sure he regrets some of that. He'll probably never admit that, but I guarantee you he regrets some of that. This is a completely different, not only Trump, but an administration. He has surrounded himself with people that know what's going on, that have been in the political realm, some of them in the political realm, and to use an old phrase, they know where the bodies are buried. They understand and have a better grasp on all of the workings of the federal government when we talk about this insubordination that's going on. When we talk about these agencies, these big bureaucratical agencies running amok, doing whatever they want, just completely flipping the bird to the new administration because they don't agree with it. The people that he has surrounded himself with now understand this and they know how to tackle it. And that's the biggest issue, or that's the biggest thing to me. It's one thing to identify what the issue is. It's another thing to actually be able to do something about it. And what we've seen over the last couple of weeks, 3 weeks now that he's been in office, is not only does he know the issues, him and his team have been able to identify them, but they know exactly where to kind of go and deal with it. They know the legal avenues that they can go after. Doge is a great example of it. The Department of Government Efficiency is not set up as a freestanding agency. It is operating under an agency that Barack Obama created and was authorized by Congress, dealing with efficiencies within government during Obamacare, when the healthcare.gov website launched and they spent a gazillion dollars on it and it was a total disaster. Barack Obama started an agency. Congress authorized the agency, and that's where DOGE is operating, under a pretty similar task. Back when it was dealing with healthcare.gov, it was dealing with efficiencies for this website interfacing with the American people. And that's where DOGE is operating. This is a much different Trump administration. And I was chatting with some folks over the weekend. We had a Young Republican Awards dinner that took place over in Greensboro. And I was chatting with some friends there. And I made the point that hindsight, of course, is 2020. But in the long run, when we look at the lasting legacy, the lasting impact, it's probably good. In the long term, it's probably good that Trump didn't win in 2020. If he had, there still would have been these individuals surrounding him that did not have his best interests in mind, did not have the American people's best interests in mind. They were in it for themselves. But because of the break in 2020, Trump had a chance to essentially reset. And he's done that incredibly well. And I think you are going to see, and you're seeing it right now, a drastically different Trump administration that would have continued from 2020 up until late last year. It's long term, and we won't know until that time comes, but long term, that was probably one of the best things that could happen. It refocused Trump. It caused him to surround himself with good people, and you're seeing the results of that right now. So as we talk about FEMA, as we talk about, recovery and relief efforts, this is some pretty cool data that is now available over at the North Carolina State Auditor's website. Dave Bolick is the new Republican auditor, and he's got a website set up at auditor.nc.gov/Helene, and it's a dashboard that is dealing with all of the information surrounding Helene, and it reads as follows. The Office of the State Auditor Helene Recovery Dashboard is an online tracking tool that brings transparency and accountability to Hurricane Helene efforts in North Carolina. It allows North Carolinians to easily track FEMA household data by county and shows the number of households that are housed, seeking assistance, and not utilizing assistance. And so that's what this is showing right here. It's been 135 days, hard to imagine. But 135 days since Helene devastated the western half of our state. And you can see some of these numbers here. 5,767 individuals displaced. More than 2,100 households. 323 of them seeking assistance. 3,332 not utilizing assistance. But I found this to be the most shocking part of it. State temporary housing units, only 6 units occupied with 3 pending procurement. That's not good at all. You have 6 people in temporary housing units from the state, from a storm that hit the area 135 days ago. Now, there is a note in the website here that data on state temporary housing units will be updated as it is secured by the state auditor's office from the Stein administration. They claim that they're working on that right now. So, these numbers updated as of the 8th. So that was what? The 8th was Saturday. So Saturday of this week, of last week. That's what this data is as of right now. This is going to be a very useful tool to come back to be able to keep an eye on over the next couple of months and potentially years. Props to Dave Bolick. Props to his team for doing what I think is a realistic thing to put available. Let's look at the data. Let's see how the progress is actually happening. It's hard to visualize and keep up to date with that when, you know, you've got sporadic news articles here and there. You've got various press releases that might come out every couple of months. It's hard to really get a grander scope of what's going on. And this dashboard over at auditor.nc.gov/Helene seems to do a phenomenal job in doing that. So props to the state auditor's office. We'll throw a link to that in the show notes, which you can get over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. Access to the daily show notes and more. If you're interested in financially supporting the show, if you believe that you are getting some value from the show here each and every weekday morning, you can head on over to patreon.com/Nick Craig. Check out our $5 and $10 a month tiers. You can set a custom amount as well. I appreciate the generosity of the individuals that have come on board thus far. And you can find out more details. Patreon.com/Nick Craig. So yesterday morning, spent some time talking about a tweet that came out from Sean Davis. And the tweet surrounded something that is continuing to be a pretty big issue for this administration. And it's not that Trump is not doing a good job. It's not that Trump is not trying to deal with the issues. It is the fact that Democrats are using the judicial system. They are court shopping to get what they want. So first, let me bring you Sean Davis's tweet again yesterday. I'll read through it quickly because we went into it yesterday. But it says this: random federal judges in blue state backwaters have no authority to unilaterally dictate who the president may talk to or what data he can access. John Roberts and SCOTUS have two options here. They can bring these inferior malcontents to heel, or they can get used to the president simply ignoring these inferior courts or Congress eliminating them entirely. Congress created these inferior courts so that the Supreme Court wouldn't have to deal with every federal case by itself. But if these rogue inferior judges are going to routinely issue, if these rogue inferior judges are going to routinely issue lawless decisions that the Supreme Court has to deal with anyway, Congress would be well within its rights to just eliminate them. Roberts and SCOTUS can immediately put these lawless judges in their place, or Roberts can watch his caseload go up 1,000x and his court's precious perceived legitimacy crater overnight. The age of tolerating this nonsense is over. So we went through that yesterday. And I mentioned, hopefully somebody within the Oval Office is reading, saw Sean Davis's tweet. He's the co-founder over at Federalist. And right as we were getting off the air yesterday, I saw this tweet pop up from Stephen Miller, who is the deputy chief of staff for the President Trump. His tweet says this: if a district court judge wants control over the executive branch, he should run for president. And that's exactly the battle that we're going to see ongoing right now. You have got these very far left progressive judges that are acting as if they are the president of the United States. They are acting as if they are the chief executive of the United States. They are acting in this fashion because that's how Democrats operate. Sue till blue. You don't like something a Republican is doing? Don't beat them at the ballot box. Sue them. Court shop, judge shop, to get it in front of a friendly judge that will give you some sort of temporary stay or restraining order blocking the executive action. That has happened dozens of times in just the last 3 weeks. And so there was some back and forth last night on CNN Newsnight. You've probably seen the clip. You've probably seen clips over the last couple of days of Scott Jennings, who is a Republican who sits on this show with Abby Phillips. This clip, it pieces together a couple of different back and forth exchanges he had with individuals on the panel. But I wanted to bring this to you, and then a very interesting CNN clip back from a couple of years ago about this issue of court shopping. The president is at a position right now where when he issues an executive order, Democrats are rushing to courtrooms across the United States, getting friendly judges to block everything that he's doing. I mean, they are trying to completely handcuff him in his authority. He is the chief executive of the United States. He is single-handedly over the executive branch. And Democrats, very dishonestly, are court shopping and judge shopping to try and block that agenda. So here's a little bit of the back and forth exchange on good old CNN last night.
I get it. You want individual federal judges who hate Donald Trump.
No, I don't.
To tie him up for 4 years.
No, I don't.
If you want a big policy question decided, let the Supreme Court do it. But in the interim, the executive has to be allowed to govern.
Tell, am I wrong about that?
Well, you're supposed to comply, but Scott's absolutely right in that the court cannot say you have to spend these dollars today. So as a governor, I dealt with this. We got things challenged in state court and federal court. It's all judge shopped, by the way. Judges don't randomly get these cases. There's a reason that these cases are filed in Boston, the Boston court, or Sherman District, Rhode Island, because they know they're going to get a
you
judge.
You raise the right point. Yeah. Should the president, the singular president, should he have to share the presidency with 300 district court judges? No, absolutely not.
But the point, though, you made a really good point that there have been judges that shut down some of President Biden's executive actions, and they understand. And the Biden administration understood that
he ignored
the checks and balances.
The Supreme Court tried to stop never will.
But not in the way that Donald Trump
Don't
you love this from the left? Scott Jennings there brings up Biden's quote about the student loan forgiveness program. The Supreme Court said, you can't do this. You don't have the authority. And the Biden administration completely ignored it. And the Democrats go, but in a different way. Yeah, but Joe Biden's a Democrat, so it's okay that he ignored the judges. It's okay that he ignored the orders. This is the argument that they make.
Donald Trump, he actually didn't ignore it.
He That's did. Right. They continued to plow forward with students.
No, he didn't.
Student loan forgiveness policy.
What did he say out loud?
I thought it was a ridiculous policy. I thought it was unconstitutional. I predicted it would get struck down. It did get struck down, and I applauded.
He didn't ignore it. Well, then why did he keep doling out taxpayer dollars to fund student loan forgiveness? If he wasn't ignoring the courts, if he said, yeah, I lost the battle in court, let's go to Congress, but he didn't do that. He did continue to ignore the courts, but Democrats don't live in reality. They live in some fictional place and land where they can do whatever the hell they want. The rules apply to us, but not them. And then they sit on national television, CNN, and act like it didn't happen. Just completely admonishing the fact that Joe Biden ignored the Supreme Court on student loan forgiveness. It goes around and around on this.
Ignore it, though. He went and tried under a different law.
So he ignored
You're
it.
Allowed-
no, that's
not ignoring
it. That is trying to be literally
under law. He's
trying
to
do it.
But let me just understand where you stand. If a district court judge rules in a way that the president dislikes, should the president listen or should the president defy?
If a district court judge tries to usurp the authority of the chief executive of this country, he should absolutely defy it. There's a difference between broad policy decisions and discrete disputes between parties. That's the difference. I'll take it to the Supreme Court.
But what about checks and balances?
So you're saying that a judge should decide how and when money is spent not the president of the United States?
Scott, let me explain the...
You're a governor,
a little
you
bit
know.
More. Let me explain it a little bit more slowly. A judge is saying...
You don't have to talk to me like that.
And that, I love that line there from Abby Phillips. This is the smug nature of the left. You don't agree with my point, so let me try to explain this a little more slowly so you can figure it out, because you're stupid. You're a stupid person. So I'm just going to slow it down and explain it a little more easily, because we have a difference in opinion. Democrats are of the mindset that when things happen that they don't like, they should be able to bring you to court all over the country to block executive action. That's how they want to operate. Republicans disagree with that. Scott Jennings here on CNN disagrees with that. But because he disagrees, Abby Phillips, the host of the CNN show, believes he's stupid. Believes that just because he has a difference of opinion, he's an idiot. And they show this. This is how they operate. Let me explain it a little slowly for you. A little more slow. Because you're stupid and you're a Republican. And we're the best party. And the American people love us. Oh, wait. Then you guys just lose the election back in November? Didn't you guys just get the floor waxed with yourselves? Seven swing states losing the giving the popular vote to a Republican for the first time in 20 years? Oh, yeah, that was you guys. Okay, let's hear what you have to say.
Congress.
I have a position on this, and you have an opinion. We can disagree.
Yeah, but I'm saying you listen to me because you're not listening, and you're making claims that are not connected to the facts. The judge is saying
maybe you are.
Congress appropriated a certain amount of money.
Yeah.
We need to litigate this.
Okay.
While we litigate this, we're going to put a hold on the actions that you took that might be unconstitutional.
So while we litigate this, I'm a judge, and I'm in charge of the executive branch, and you're not, forget it.
You just can't compel the executive branch to spend the dollars. You can't do that. Can't say we're going to start,
Have you heard of the impoundment?
No matter who the president is, the duly elected chief executive of this country, they should not be sharing the broad plenary powers of the presidency with 300 individual district court judges. That is not what the people want.
That is a great position to take when you are in power.
Yeah,
when
I will believe it no matter what.
District court judges are not in power.
Unbelievable. By the way, this is a post from Joe Biden when the Supreme Court ruled against his illegal action of trying to absolve individuals of their student loan debt. Let's roll the clip. Well, it's not even a clip. Roll the tweet. At Joe Biden. The Supreme Court tried to block me from relieving student debt, but they didn't stop me. I've relieved student debt for over 5 million Americans. I'm going to keep going. So this is what I'm giving you this now. You're hearing tomorrow's news today here on the Nick Craig Show, because this argument is going to start blowing up all over cable news over the next couple of days and probably weeks, because the Trump administration is going to be fed up with this. And Democrats are going to make this plea that, of course, Trump is an authoritarian. He's a dictator. He doesn't follow the rule of law. Yet their guy put a post out on X saying that the Supreme Court won't stop him. And then actually attempted and did, in some cases, usurp the court. He continued to relieve students of their loans, their debt to the federal government through student loan forgiveness after the Supreme Court told him he didn't have the authority. But see, Democrats justify it by saying, but he did it in a different way. He used a different law or something. So is it based on the merits of the issue, or is it based on the singular case that's in front of a judge? The left has no standing with this. They have no position of high ground to browbeat Trump and browbeat the Republicans into their wacko agenda. They have no moral high ground to be standing on this at all. Case in point, this post from the 46th president of the United States, which I guess the hosts on CNN had never seen, because Scott Jennings brought that up, and what did they do? That's not true. That's a lie. You're an idiot. Let me explain this slower to you so you can understand it. And then this, 2023, there's a person's name that you are probably familiar with, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, AOC is her name. You've heard that a time or two. Previous Starbucks barista, now a sitting member of Congress. What did she say on CNN back in 2023, when the courts were blocking an approval of an abortion pill and were giving the president of the United States, Joe Biden, some issues? I don't know. We're just going to have to listen and find out.
There has been thought, I believe, given to this. Senator Ron Wyden has already issued statements, for example, advising what we should do in a situation like this, which I concur, which is that I believe that the Biden administration should ignore this ruling. I think that we, the courts have the legitimacy, and they rely on the legitimacy of their rulings. And what they are currently doing is engaged in an unprecedented and dramatic erosion of the legitimacy of the courts.
Whoa! Hold on a second here. So AOC tells CNN that, quote, the Biden administration should ignore the court. This is very troubling news for me to hear. This is a very troubling statement from our favorite Starbucks barista. So, again, I'm bringing you all of this morning because this is going to be a major battle that's going to play out. I'm going to go back to the Stephen Miller tweet and then we'll finish the AOC clip. But this Stephen Miller tweet, if a district court judge wants control over the executive branch, he should run for president. This is setting up the battle right here that we're going to see over the next couple of weeks and months. The Trump administration is going to start ignoring these district court rulings because they're absurd. And then let the Supreme Court deal with it. This battle is being set up right now. You're watching it before your very eyes. And Democrats have absolutely no leg to stand on. This is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez less than 2 years ago making these claims on national television.
It is the justices themselves, through the deeply partisan and unfounded nature of these rulings, that are undermining their own enforcement.
So you're saying the Biden administration should ignore this court, but what does that look like? What does that actually mean?
You know, I think the interesting thing when it comes to a ruling is that it relies on enforcement. And it is up to the Biden administration to enforce, to choose whether or not to enforce such a ruling.
But is that...
So it was the Biden administration's choice whether they move forward with the ruling. But if Trump wanted to do the same thing, as it seems like the battle might be setting up right now, it would not be okay. We've caught the Democrats in another one of their lies this morning, exclusively on the Nick Craig Show. You've probably heard the phrase before, if it weren't for double standards, the Democrats would have no standards at all. This really is the picture-perfect definition of that. They will yell and scream on cable news about how Trump is an authoritarian, how he's not following the courts, how he's a dictator, he's taking over the country. Yet these same individuals, when the Biden administration didn't like what was happening with the courts, whether that be rulings on student loan forgiveness, or in this case, it was dealing with some abortion pill that a Texas judge ruled, they didn't want to agree with the courts. Now, how does all of this play out? That's a great question. How does the administration actually ignore the courts? Got a question coming in on YouTube this morning. Says, what is the process of courts can't stop anything? I got to admit, I don't like ignoring the courts. And I agree with you. I don't like ignoring the courts either. I think it's you are walking a very dangerous tightrope when you're in that period of time, when you're in that position where that's what's going on. But as Sean Davis put in his post on X, the Supreme Court needs to step in and deal with this. If John Roberts, who is the Chief Justice, and the Supreme Court doesn't step in and start dealing with these very partisan, very, very partisan district court judges and their out-of-control rulings that have essentially blocked a vast majority of anything Trump's tried to do over the last 3 weeks, if he doesn't step in, Sean Davis, CEO and founder of The Federalist, says the age of tolerating this nonsense is over. And I have to agree with him. I'm not a fan of ignoring the courts. I think it's very bad long term. But when you have partisan judges that are essentially stripping executive power, which they do not have the authority to do under any circumstances, if district courts want to operate in that manner, drastic times calls for drastic measures, unfortunately. And I think this is going to come back and handily bite the Democrats in the ass. I strongly believe that that's the case. Because they have set up this battle, they have set up this fight, and for far too long, harping back to what we mentioned yesterday, Republicans have just kind of sunk their heads and said, oh, well, okay. That's the courts, I guess. We'll let this play out on the fair playing, fair, even playing field. It's not how Democrats operate. I always like to use a sports analogy with this. And again, this is very tricky stuff we're talking about. But Democrats constantly change the rules of the game, and Republicans continue to play by the old rules. And I understand the whole, oh, we got to take the high road and all this. I'm through with that. Taking the high road has gotten Republicans, conservatives, it's gotten us nowhere. It's gotten us absolutely nowhere. We constantly get taken advantage of. We are constantly losing battles because of this perceived idea that we need to take the high road. It's nonsense. I'm over it. We won. We're in charge. You guys lost. Get the hell over it. I mean, that's where I'm at. Watching everything that Trump tries to do being blocked by liberal judges in Massachusetts and Rhode Island and New Hampshire, I'm just done dealing with it. I'm over it. But I like using that sports analogy. You all watched the Super Bowl on Sunday. What if one team had a completely separate set of rules than the other? What if 5 yards was a first down for the Eagles instead of 10 yards like it is normally? That would make the game drastically different. You would have a complete and total imbalance of what's going on. Democrats change the rules constantly for them when it fits what they're trying to do, fits their narrative, fits their agenda, and then Republicans are supposed to play by the old rules. Nope, that's over. Democrats operate this way. It's time for Republicans to do the same. And I know that's a slippery slope. I'm fully aware. I am completely in tune with the slippery slope that can be. But there becomes a point in time where you've got to take the kid gloves off and actually get on the ground and start punching back against the left. And I strongly believe that's where we are. We're coming very, we might not be there yet, but we are coming dangerously close to that taking effect. And I'm not going to be surprised in the slightest. The Stephen Miller tweet highlights it pretty well. I'm not going to be surprised in the slightest when this administration comes out and says, to hell with these district court orders. You don't like it? Take us to the Supreme Court. And we'll go from there. This tweet gives some very interesting insight as to some of these discussions happening deep within the Oval Office. So this is a continuing thread. I suspect we will continue to talk about this a lot in the coming days, weeks, and months. We'll keep an eye on it right here on The Nick Craig Show. I want to tell you about a site that I use each and every morning to prep for the show. It's Ground News. Ground.news is their website. I've been using it for, I mean, at least 3 or 4 years now. It helps me stay up to date with events from around the world in situations where it's impossible to consult a single source for the full story. Again, that's why I use Ground News. Ground News is an app and website that combines news from around the world in one place so you can compare coverage for every news source. You can see if the news source has a political bias. You can see how reliable their reporting is and who owns them. They even have a feature called Blind Spot that highlights news disproportionately covered by one side of the political spectrum. Get news from thousands of sources worldwide in one place and verify your information. Subscribe through my link and get 40% off a Vantage subscription. It's the one that I use, and it gets you unlimited access to every feature. Visit nickcraig.com/ground to learn more and save 40% off. Your subscription not only helps the show, but it supports Ground News as they make the media landscape more transparent. Visit nickcraig.com/ground. That's nickcraig.com/ground and subscribe today for 40% off your Vantage subscription. We've got a lot more coming up this morning, including Tulsi Gabbard's confirmation. That could be happening as soon as today, plus some legislation filed in the General Assembly that could deal with the Democrat AG in North Carolina going after the Trump administration. Those details coming up here in just a few minutes. You're listening to The Nick Craig Show live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. And welcome back to The Nick Craig Show, streaming live this Wednesday morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Don't forget that you can subscribe to the show over on Rumble, where you can watch it live weekday mornings at 7 o'clock, or catch it after the fact when it's more convenient for your schedule. Rumble.com/The Nick Craig Show. It's Rumble.com/The Nick Craig Show. So there's a very interesting piece of legislation that has been filed in the North Carolina General Assembly. We'll get into that coming up here in just a minute or two. However, I did want to let you know that this morning there is some questions about Tulsi Gabbard's confirmation. It could have happened as early as midnight last night. That's what was being set up. However, being reported over at the Post Millennial this morning, her confirmation has been postponed until this morning. It reads as follows. The Senate postponed evening votes to confirm President Donald Trump's nominee for Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, and advancing Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s nomination for Health Secretary. Those votes will now be happening this morning. At what time those votes will be happening is not immediately clear as of right now, but Gabbard is shaping up for her confirmation as the Director of National Intelligence today. If there's any newsworthy events that come of that, we'll bring it to you coming up tomorrow morning. And if there's anything major that breaks, don't forget to follow me over on X at Nicholas M. Craig on Twitter or X, where you can keep up to date with news throughout the day. X.com/Nicholas M. Craig. All right, so over to the North Carolina General Assembly this morning. An interesting post over at Port City Daily. The headline is as follows. Bill filed to block North Carolina Attorney General from advancing any argument against Trump executive orders. This is very much in tune with what we were talking about earlier in the show, about these courts and about all of these legal challenges that are being brought against the Trump administration and their executive orders. Representative Keith Kidwell from Beaufort County introduced a bill on Monday to prevent Attorney General Jeff Jackson, who is a Democrat, former member of Congress, from participating in any legal action that would invalidate an executive order issued by President Donald Trump. The brief House bill matches a Senate bill, SB 58, which was introduced last week. Jackson is representing North Carolina in several suits against recent Trump administration executive orders and actions, including multi-state lawsuits challenging the federal government's funding freeze to states, attempts to end birthright citizenships, funding cuts to the National Institute of Health, and the Department of Government Efficiency's access to the Treasury Department's central payment system. Progressive leftist Jeff Jackson joined 22 attorney generals to sue the Trump administration to stop its temporary freeze on grants, loans, and assistance back on January the 28th. Jackson had this to say in a news release in which he signed on. Various federal agencies have colloquially and unevenly began suspending access to a wide range of funds. Although it's not clear which programs and funds will be suspended, the announcement has left government agencies and other organizations across North Carolina uncertain about the services they can provide in the upcoming weeks. U.S. District Judge John McConnell issued a temporary restraining order prohibiting the Trump administration from barring funds to states late last month, and on Monday, a judge issued another directive demanding the Trump administration's compliance after finding that it failed to adhere to the order. So that's what's going on in these states. That's the issue that's at hand right now, where you've got all of these progressive AGs in all of these states that despise Trump, despise the Trump administration, hate Republicans, yet they are taking state taxpayer funds, in the case of North Carolina, your and my resources, and suing the Trump administration over these executive orders, court shopping them, getting them in front of friendly judges, and blocking executive action. Jackson also filed the suit against DOGE, the Department of Government Efficiency, with 18 attorney generals arguing that the agency violated the constitutional separation of power doctrine and federal administrative law by allowing officials without appropriate authority to interfere with funds allocated by Congress. Senator Tom Tillis said, quote, "That runs afoul of the Constitution in the strictest sense. But clearly you saw Biden do it. It's not uncommon for presidents to flex a little bit on where they can spend and where they can stop spending." States argue DOGE's access to sensitive information poses a security risk, and a federal judge concurred Saturday and issued a temporary restraining order against DOGE. over and over and over again. So here's the piece of legislation that has been introduced. Well, actually, this is a different piece of legislation, but it kind of goes hand in hand. Senate Bill 382, which would strip authorities away from various individuals, including the governor, prohibits Jackson from taking any position on legality of state laws being challenged in court that is inconsistent with the General Assembly. It includes a provision specifically limiting limitations on, quote, participation in foreign litigation. This is from this legislation. Quote, the Attorney General shall not, as a party, amicus, or any other participant in any action pending before a state or federal judge in another state, advance any argument that would result in an invalidation of any statute enacted by the General Assembly. The newly introduced bills in the General Assembly would change the provision to include any executive order issued by the President of the United States as an additional restriction. So that is what we are looking at here in North Carolina, as we've got this legislation that's been introduced. This is a very good avenue for Republicans to go after. This is a great way to try and slow down the Democrats' very dirty tactics that they're implementing in regards to the Trump administration. If you bar these attorney generals, now obviously this is only going to happen in states that have Republican general assemblies or Republican legislatures. But if you bar the attorney generals from taking place in these suits, that kind of stops a lot of the nonsense right away. That puts a huge block on this attempt to completely, essentially handcuff the current administration. And I think it's a pretty good avenue to do it. So we'll keep an eye on these pieces of legislation, taking a look at the calendar for the General Assembly. They are, of course, back in Raleigh this week. There's a couple of things set to take place today. Jared Lowry is having a press conference at 10:30 this morning. Not sure if that's going to be in relation to the announcement back a couple of weeks ago that Trump has directed his Secretary of the Interior to come up with a plan for the Lumbee tribe to get full federal recognition. There is a lot going on in the GA today. You can see the full, pull up the full calendar for you this morning. There's an appropriations bill that's going to be in the House at 9 o'clock this morning. It's the Disaster Recovery Act of 2025. That, of course, is Hurricane Helene relief. You've got some more appropriations and some other meetings that are scheduled to take place over the next couple of days and weeks as well. The calendar gets filled out as lawmakers get back in Raleigh. So a busy day in Raleigh today. We'll keep an eye on it and see if we get any additional details. So just kind of closing all of this up, you know, you've got Doge, you've got Elon Musk, attempts to rein in the federal government, attempts to claw back some ridiculous amounts of money that are being spent, that are being allocated, that are being wasted on nonsensical things. Elon Musk was in the Oval Office yesterday with Trump as, once again, the president spent his afternoon signing executive orders. And there was a question asked of Elon by a reporter about, you know, the $50 million worth of condoms that are being sent to the Middle East. You might think that's a Babylon Bee headline. Why would the United States be spending $50 million on condoms at all, let alone sending it to the Middle East? And this was the back and forth exchange between Musk and this reporter yesterday afternoon.
Serious money.
Mr. Musk, you said on X that an example of the fraud that you have cited was $50 million of condoms was sent to Gaza. But after fact check this, apparently Gaza in Mozambique, and the program was to protect them against HIV. So can you correct the statements? It wasn't sent to Hamas, actually. It was sent to Mozambique, which makes sense why condoms was sent there.
Yeah.
And how can we make sure that all the statements that you said were correct so we can trust what you say?
So before we get into Elon's comments, I just want to highlight exactly what that reporter just said. This is how the left is attacking, and I'll put that in quotes, attacking Doge and the attempts by this administration to rein in spending. Elon Musk claims that $50 million, Doge claims that $50 million is being sent to Gaza, aka Hamas, through U.S. taxpayer dollars. And then the reporter goes, well, we fact-checked. It's being sent to Mozambique, so it's not technically Hamas in Gaza. This is just proving how off the Democrats are in regards to their messaging. The issue at hand is that the United States taxpayers are spending $50 million to send condoms to the Middle East. Folks, that's the issue at hand. Democrats want to try and play this gotcha game by claiming this information's not accurate. We didn't spend $8.5 million on Politico. We spent a whole bunch of money on Politico Plus subscriptions, which is a service that costs about $30,000 a year to get access to bill tracking and other sorts of details from Politico. We didn't buy just regular Politico subscriptions. It was Politico Pro. That's how they justify it. They are completely missing the issue at hand, which is government spending is out of control. And the American people are fed up with it. Why are they fed up with it? Because over the last 4 or 5 years, the American people, have had to make significant sacrifices in the way in which they live their lives to keep up with inflation. They've had to change the things that they want to do to stay and be fiscally responsible. And so when they open up a newspaper or read online that the American people are subsidizing $8.5 million to Politico, spending $50 million on condoms to send it to either somewhere in the Middle East, whether it's Gaza or not, is the issue. It's that the money is being spent on this nonsense. And I thought Musk handled this pretty well on this question from the reporter. Let's get into his response.
Make sure that all the statements that you said were correct, so we can trust what you say.
Well, first of all, some of the things that I say will be incorrect and should be corrected. So nobody's going to bat 1,000. I mean, we will make mistakes, but we'll act quickly to correct any mistakes. I'm not sure we should be sending $50 million worth of condoms to anywhere, frankly. I'm not sure that's something Americans would be really excited about. And that is really an enormous number of condoms, if you think about it. But if it went to Mozambique instead of Gaza, I'm like, okay, that's not as bad, but still, why are we doing that?
Perfectly said. The left wants to play this gotcha game. Oh, was it sent to Mozambique or was it sent to Gaza? Who the hell cares? You and I are paying to send condoms to the Middle East. Words that I never thought would leave my mouth in a million years, but that's what's happening. And I thought Musk handled that pretty well. Yeah, everything that Doge comes out with, it may not all be 100% accurate. We're not going to bat 1,000. But when we find issues, we're going to correct them. Well, a little bit of honesty? Media doesn't like that. They're, of course, demagoguing him on that this morning. Elon Musk admitted he's going to lie. I don't think he admitted he was going to lie. I think he admitted that the information that they're getting, probably the information itself isn't wholly accurate, because of the levels of bureaucracy and red tape and selective accounting that goes on in the federal government, and said, well, when we have issues, when we have mistakes, we're going to make sure to correct them as quickly as possible. Sounds good to me. I'm totally okay with individuals correcting their mistakes. There's nothing wrong with that at all. So this gotcha game over Politico and condoms in Mozambique versus Hamas in Gaza, Democrats continue to completely miss the issue at hand. Democrats continue to completely miss the larger issue. They want to nitpick all of these smaller things. They want to try and play this gotcha game with their fact-checking outlets, but they're missing the issue, which is federal spending, government spending is out of control. We need to stop funding pet projects throughout the world because it's not the responsibility of the United States taxpayer to do that. Plain and simple. End of story. So the gotcha game is going to continue, but it's not resonating. I really don't think it is. I don't think it's strike. I don't think somebody watching that yesterday goes, well, damn, I was pissed that those condoms were being sent to Gaza. But now that I know that they were being sent to Mozambique, I'm all in favor of it. I'm okay with $50 million of condoms to Mozambique as long as they're not going to Gaza. I don't think anybody saw that yesterday and went, oh yeah, okay, it's okay now. Oh, I'm fine with it now. I don't think that happened at all. So setting up for another busy news day, we've got a press briefing at 1 o'clock this afternoon. Caroline Leavitt will be back in the basement of the White House with her press briefing. There'll probably be some highlights of that come forward. We'll be keeping a close eye on that and bring you those latest details coming up tomorrow morning. Don't forget that if you'd like to support the show, you can do so, including getting bonus access over at patreon.com/Nick Craig, including our daily show notes. It's patreon.com/Nick Craig. That's going to do it for a Wednesday edition of the Nick Craig Show. We're back tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. on YouTube, Rumble, and X, and 24/7 via podcast at the Nick Craig Show. Have a great day.